All right, folks, once again, welcome to Better Men Sweat Base. Better you, better me, better Trinidad and Tobago. On the line right now, we have Ms. Dr. Gavin Hira, Regional Security Expert, former head of National Operations Center. We're going to be talking about policing strategies and crime reduction. Of course, we're talking about all these different things that's going on with our schools. It starts from the young and it grows. So good afternoon to you, Mr. Hira.
Hi. Good evening, Base. Good evening to your team and to our listening and streaming public, Trinidad and Tobago. And congratulations on the great job you guys are doing out of this media platform, my brother.
All right, man. Thank you very much. So where do you stand right now with in terms of crime in Trinidad and Tobago? There's so many people who have so many different aspects of it, but I'm sure you would have your own view about, I mean, this Trinidad and Tobago is such a small place to be having all this crime. You know, what say you about that?
Yeah, correct. And, you know, it's really echoing the sentiments of the ground, because regardless of if a government was in power and that government has changed and is now replaced by a new system, crime remained the same. Crime was always pushing and pressing against the safety and the security of our citizens. So the exchange of governance now has not really reduced crime or in any way put a dent in crime. That remained. Crime, and more importantly, criminality, which is very important, which is the mentality and the thinking and the behavior of citizens to either commit a crime or to consider committing a crime, those with criminal intentions. And it is disturbing, if I must say. As a matter of fact, I was sharing recently in a workshop, and the words that came out for a question similar to this was, you know, people are uncomfortable, they're scared, some people are packing up shop and leaving this country in droves. Others are concerned for our future. But more importantly, very, very disturbing, because a small country like ours, rather than we could live here comfortably, we are living here uncomfortably. You know, you have to look over your shoulders all the time. No longer is it safe to socialize. Mm. You're concerned for your children, you're concerned for your future, you're concerned for your property. So speaking from the position of an ordinary citizen in this country, it is very disturbing and it's sometimes scary.
Yeah, but what you said, because there's no consequence to action. I mean, when you know you could get away with something, you do it and you could get away with it. It seems like in broad daylight it happening. There was a time only at night, you could have said night, but it's always morning, noon, night, broad daylight, any day, anytime, anyhow, anywhere.
You know, that's a big question. That's a powerful question, Beast. I know your man is really word of God. Ecclesiastes 18:11 tells us, not me, not the commissioner, not the minister of Homeland Security, when justice for a crime is not swift, man's heart is bent on doing bad, on doing wrong, on committing another crime. And that is in the word of God, you know, in Ecclesiastes. And what that really tells us is two main things. One, if justice is going to be slow, then you know what? I will take it into my own hands, and I will deal with it on my own, and I will seek justice. The flip side to that, it is also telling us that if somebody was able to commit a crime and justice is slow, nobody is being arrested, nothing is being investigated, it dies a natural death, you know what? I am getting encouragement that I too could commit a crime and get away with it. That is written in the word of God. That's not based, Mr. Hira, commissioner or minister. That is there. So since way back when, there was always a tendency to influence a certain type of behavior, and you're quite correct. People are of the belief that it is not being dealt with, not being investigated with, we're not getting that sort of swift to the wrong. We are hearing now some utterances from government that there's an intention to accelerate how they deal with certain things, to get a lot more firmer. So we have to now see whether we were going to move from basically political talk into some sort of action-oriented response, in that we're going to see action. We are a society that is visually stimulated based. We like to see things happening. We want of to course. See if you're saying that, then let me see it happening. Yeah. We roll out.
Yeah, man. And of course, but if government come, government go, they've been packed with. We have so many lawyers in our governments. I mean, the highest form of justice would be the judiciary, but with a lot of criminals, it just seems to be a revolving door. You know, I mean, we have men out, sometimes men on 40-something charges, 50-something charges. I mean, how is that, you know, how is that possible? How we could fix that?
Yeah, they're definitely. You see the arm wrestle all the time from law enforcement and the prosecutorial process to deal now with the judiciary process where people may get away scot-free based on a situation, or they may end up on bail for a very serious offense. And it worries sometimes those who are giving their all day and night to investigate and to bring matters before the court. And then we have these sort of falling apart of the system. I think a lot has to do now in how the judiciary and law enforcement and the prosecutorial process focus now on criminal matters. We've been hearing talks of additional courts. I think that will help. We've hearing talks about clearing up some of the backlog. That too will help. But we also have to look at how we are treating with certain matters. And now that you are so correct about the fact that we have a what we call a plethora of lawyers. We have lawyers on both ends of this defense. We are populated, we are pregnant with lawyers as politicians. We need to see that sort of knowledge, that headspace, that mindset, that brain power being applied now to legislation and to dealing with certain matters, so we don't have this issue. Because when you are the victim of a crime and the perpetrator basically gets away or gets a slap on the wrist or is back outside on bail, can you tell me the type of fear that comes upon you, knowing that you were a victim, this person robbed you, or there's a home invasion, or you were seen with a gun, or your life was threatened, and then he's outside on bail? So we have to be able to deal with that. And I think we need to speed that process up, and we need to also, I mean, nobody wants to be promoting locking up people and filling the jails, but we also have to address the matter so that we can see that justice is being done and people are being held accountable and incarcerated for the crimes that they commit.
Yeah, I know you're a well-traveled man. You travel especially. I mean, I love going to New York City. And when you see a New York City police officer, you see their stance, their walk. I mean, I know there will be some road cops maybe in between, but it's very few and far between. What makes it so different? I mean, is it like you're raising salary at them? I don't think it's a salary. You take an oath to protect and serve. What is it that makes it so different in other countries where a police really, really, really and truly is passionate about the job? And I believe passion is really lacking when it comes to policing, if you agree.
Yeah, you see, passion and the commitment, you know, you see, we have to be able to go to answer that, to have the discussion, and I'm thankful again for the discussion for those who are listening. To answer that or to respond to that, we have to go back a little bit. And you are correct. When you look at some of the foreign systems, they present a certain brand and image. They present a certain zero tolerance, no nonsense kind of approach. You see that, as well as you will still see some slackness. You will still see some compromising. It happens. It's just natural, right? There was a time in country when, be it defense force, police officer, fire officer, prison officer, you were diehard. You know, I myself came from the Defence Force in the Coast Guard. And you were Coast Guard man 24 hours. You were soldier 24 hours. You was a police, whether in or out of uniform, and you were respected in the community. You carried yourself a certain way. You were police 24/7. Do they still have that? Yes. We still have one or two of these officers, male and female, who stand out with the thing, right? And represent that uniform, that badge, represent it. But what we have seen over time,
recording in progress,
is a watering down of the system, where no longer you have that passion and the commitment. What you have is people coming to work to pull a shift.
Yeah,
And I see this without any reservation. From 8 to 4, 8 to 12, or whatever, pull in a shift, and after that shift, have nothing to tell me. When I come back on the platform, then we could talk. Defense Force, Coast Guard, police again. People may be upset by what we are saying here this afternoon.
No, but is it the truth?
You don't have the passion and the diehard of 24/7. So therefore, when you don't have that, and a man comes on to pull a shift, a man comes on to do 2-3 patrols, and that's it for the day. That's what you're getting. But we can't point the finger only to the ills of that response and behavior. We have to look now to the entirety. Has the Defense Force, has the police service, those other key agencies also dropped the ball or defused or diluted the morale building aspect of the service and what it stands for? I'm thankful the new commission, well, I can't say new commission, but who's in the seat, the acting commissioner, Mr. Junior Benjamin, he's advocating strongly in the lines of operational excellence and organizational development to go at the morale. When the Minister of Homeland Security assumed office, one of the first statements he made was building up that morale and building up the interest base. Nobody has more passion to do what they do that more than you in your line of work, in your space, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the point of times, you own the thing. When this is your time on air, on platform, you own that. There's a sense of ownership. And I'm echoing that emotion to our law enforcement and national security. No longer do we see us owning the thing. You understand? Men are just there to put the start and the stop and walk away. Mm-hmm. Because that tells you there has been a lack of interest. How much is the system actually pouring that interest and showing that we care and taking care of the people to give them a different feeling overall? No, I'm not here to point fingers. No, are we to point blame? What we're doing is raising a conversation that is also identifying an awareness of what is existing outside there. And these are the same people we're expecting to be our gatekeepers and to fight crime and to reduce crime and put their lives on the line. So you understand there's a balance to the thing, a left hand and a right hand, but coming and joining that thing together and bringing back the passion is going to be a major job by whoever is in the seat. But more importantly, is to identify the issue right now. And I said again, the acting commissioner has made it quite clear, and part of his strategy and the introduction of the new strategic plan of the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service is to look at the officers and to apply that morale building motivation to move them from not pulling a shift, but owning the position and the image brand of the TTPS and by extension national security.
Now Trinidad is a small place. I mean, you might have a man who's a corporal. I mean promotion is another issue, but when you have a guy going back into the general population, a police officer or even a prisons officer, and living in a community amongst, you know, do you think that is part of the problem too?
It is, because why would he have to go back into a community that is probably populated with criminal presence or activities, but he has to live there, and he's the police officer. He's outnumbered because it's a we and them. Right now, it's a we and them.
Yeah.
You know, and a line has been drawn in the sand, and social media hasn't helped that. The music system hasn't helped that. The lack of it, of that sort of mentorship to our young people hasn't helped that.
Mm-hmm.
I am strongly an advocate for two main things in this country, and that is one, for a national security hospital where members of the national security framework and, of course, retirees could actually go for health care, because they serve the country. At the end of the day, your life is on the line. Serve the flag.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, more importantly, is housing. We need to prioritize housing and accommodation for law enforcement officers, just as many of us, and could attest to that, many of our listening public this evening, who are there years with their name on a file to get a house, a home, somewhere that they can call their own in a community, is the same sort of issues being faced by our law enforcement people. Yes, somebody will argue that, they will dispute that, they'll raise a response to me and say, but no, Mr. Hero, you need to be aware that in every development, we cater for X amount of police officers or X amount of defense force. So I heard that. I haven't really seen it rolled out as it should be, and I think it needs to be done more. Maybe an entire community, for instance, could be used for that sort of accommodation and housing. But all people need housing. The same people that had to face the gas pump in obese and had to face the empty shelves in the supermarket, or the sick child and take a bench in an accident and emergency in one of our health institutions.
Yeah,
so we are not really getting privileges.
Mm-hmm.
We are not getting privileges as we see in some of the other countries. Some of the international models are available for us to look at and maybe emulate to some extent to be able to put in these things. All of these things are snippets, are blocks in the, that build the foundation of morality and motivation.
I like what they speak of, because I have a good friend of mine in New York. He's a veteran, an old veteran, and there's the vet hospital. He goes, gets his checkup. I'm talking about everything. He want to do blood tests. He getting that eye test, getting that pills, getting that prescription, everything, because he's a vet and he served in the war in America, and he's entitled to that, you know?
Yeah. I would like to see, but let me start with Tobago Airbridge, that before they board, they could say, I'm serving members of law enforcement or national security or retirees, and you can actually go on the aircraft list.
Yeah, man.
Just started with the Tobago thing. That's all about when you're in a terminal somewhere in the U.S., serving members and retirees are getting to board first, because they appreciate the fact that you put your life on the line for the country. We are in a similar sort of recognition. Recognition is a big one. Are we being recognized? Now, we're not here to find fault. There are people probably anxious to ring the phone and say, so you're right here what you're saying, but some of these fellas real slack. We will always get that.
Yeah.
You will always
get that. But have good ones, man. We bad apples don't spoil the whole bunch. We do have a lot of good, hard-working, servicemen and women out there. Of course. Right now, we're talking about that. We were talking before about what's going on in our nation's schools. I have always been one to say, years now, I've been saying, put police officers in schools. Right? I would even say, put them to teach in schools. A bunch of teachers get vexed when they say police officers are not equipped to teach. They don't have the temperament to teach. But I believe if you put police officers in that uniform, or even army in a classroom, people will pay attention, and we could have seen a shift in the discipline, because a lot of what happens right now in school is lack of discipline. There are too many female teachers in our schools. Way too many female. I'm sure back in the days when you and I were going to school, there were a lot of male teachers. I remember some of my teachers were 6 feet tall. I think you couldn't play with them at all. But there are way too many females. Men are moving away from that teaching profession. So in terms of putting police in schools or having some sort of police or police presence in school, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's something that should be on the front burner for our decision makers and those who are in the salary range to action it. But we have to speak it here, base. For our people, we have to speak it so that we can raise an awareness somewhere. And somebody, wait now, I heard a conversation between Hero and base, still base there. That's what they're saying there, not a bad idea at all. And I hear you. And what you're saying is probably what society is saying. You think like it's going in the next direction. When you look at the violence and the extremities of the violence with student fighting teacher and fighting themselves and parent fighting child in the school, be it of age or whatever, coming all the way up. And it's about time we put some kind of security, and that's beyond MTS. But I'm saying we have a number of retirees from the police service, the prison service, fire services, and the defense force who are still action and active ready, who had to walk off of the platform because of lack of promotion or based on their career path or whatever, at the ripe and ready experienced age of between the 45, 47, 50, who can still give us a good 3 years. And I'm saying we look at that core cadre of people, that availability. And I remember being part nationally when we were at the National Operations Center, and I was the former director there, and we spearheaded an initiative known as the ESSI, which was the Energy Sector Security Initiative. And the ESSI provided the joint security arms of the energy sector to come together to coordinate and to collaborate and to have discussions regarding security and what was trending, living very close with national security and activating security readiness and preparation and responses for the energy sector. And it was working well at one time. I'm not too sure on its operability now, but it was designed for that sector. Let's take that model base and let's just shift it towards education based on the where are we going to find the people. I just identified it. Mm-hmm. And we designed something called the EDSSI, right. EDSSI, the Educational Sector Security Initiative, so that we don't have to pull or drain or siphon from the already strained, expanded police service or the defense force. But via the Educational Sector Security Initiative, we can actually have a specific unit under the Ministry of Education, but aligned to the Ministry of Homeland Security, providing that sort of oversight and overwatch in our schools. And I agree with you that we can have former national security officials as part of the faculty, as the staff. They can be teaching a subject, nationalism, for instance, just as we have PT, you know, teaching you about your country, about behavior, about law, doing the right and the wrong. And that becomes part of our curriculum because it is building on the citizenship and the commitment to national, what I'll call duty and your role and function as a citizen of this country. And I see that there's a possibility. Mr. Hero, you see that when you're talking to that kind of work? Why not we try it with a pilot project? Let's look at a high-risk zone. Let's take two schools, for instance, and one in the north, one in the south, maybe one in central. And we work on the model, make the little errors, the lessons learned, but we perfect the plan. And we can also massage that plan base that it could actually be a CARICOM model, because it's not a Trinidad and Tobago problem. This is a regional problem. We've seen that influence. So this model that we designed and we perfected here in Trinidad could actually be transferred and transmitted to some of our Caribbean neighbors, and it can be a solution to the pressing problem that we are facing.
Nice, man. Beautiful. We'll open up the phone lines for Mr. Hiran. Just a short while. 625-2257, 627-3223. Send your WhatsApp messages, 306-1065. I don't know if you watch a lot of these crime shows and things, but I love FBI. The FBI shows on a Tuesday night, boy. FBI Miami, FBI, you know, international. And I see where people... They work.
You have a lot of time in your hands, Mr. Beast. Well,
not Tuesday night. I like to watch my FBI. But and I see where they work undercover, boy. And man, and I like watching these shows too because I feel sometimes that's the only time crime does get solved. But I see they're working undercover, boy. What it is wrong with working undercover in Trinidad and Tobago? So that is too small. Why we can't have? I know it have some police officers. They're smally. They could pass as teenagers and think they could be in the schools, know what's going on. They could be in gangs. They could think this, that, and just fill in and filth in, even if it is on the streets. These, you just see these movies, they will do everything they had to do. Put somebody undercover to get intel and information. Is that being done here in Trinidad and Tobago? If not, why can't we do these things?
No. Part of the strategy of the TTPS, I must say, and especially along the lines of public safety and some of the other things that deal with policing itself, and investigations that the acting commissioner is advancing on that agenda. Covert policing is also part of it. It is being done here in Trinidad. Has been done since time began. Mm-hmm. But we have to also understand the dynamics, the tradecraft in that that aspect of policing, covert policing, has also shifted and changed, and that whole approach over the years, and therefore we have to also be on top of it with regard to our training and our applications to the field and the theater of operations when it comes to covert policing. You would always hear the former Minister of National Security and former Commissioner Gary talk about the covert policing and the undercover police in New York City and that type of stuff under the days of Giuliani, and it's because that model was also studied and applied here when he was minister, and we were the NOC and with the TTPS to make it a little more more penetrative towards certain crime-stricken areas. So covert policing is something that we need to look at big time here in this country, especially along the lines of gangs and the infiltration of gang and that type of stuff, and some of the stuff we're seeing with the violence in the schools. But as I said, it's a new science to that. And what has happened with the advancement of that initiative is that the introduction of technology too, the introduction of surveillance, the introduction of various aspects of technologically driven policing has also joined into this arsenal. So it's not before where we had a guy undercover in the dark shades, hiding in the corner or pretending to be something else. That works and still works, which is the humans, right? The human intelligence aspect of it. But surveillance has also been added to the arsenal to give us an additional oomph. You know, with technology, so there is a certain amount of covert policing that can be done when you maximize the technology. So I'm saying yes to this, and I'm saying also it needs to be reviewed. I know it's part of that strategic direction of the TTPS and law enforcement. This now has to be across national security with our intelligence agencies, with the defense force, even within the prison service. The prison service gone in the next direction. That thing, it has a horse that ready to bolt. If it hasn't bolted, already out of control. So undercover aspects for the common understanding, which is really covert approach to operations, plays a major role in the reduction or the solving or the detection or the information gathering when it comes to national security.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's time, I mean, with all the, well, the, we have venues, I mean, Trinidad and Tobago, I like to use New York a lot, right? Trinidad and Tobago is like little New York. We have all these immigrants here. Do you think it's time to open up our police service to immigrants, especially to some Venezuelans, you know, people of different nationalities who may understand different cultures?
The base. I made a statement about 2 years ago, and people want to mash me up in because I advocated for that, you know, very early. I remember when there were issues in the Florida Channel when they had the Haitians coming over in big time, from Haiti, the immigrants, the migrants, illegal migrants landing on the shores of Florida. The U.S. Coast Guard initiated a plan where they employed Haitians who were citizens of the U.S. To be part of the Coast Guard in a special operation, who spoke the Creole, right, and who could have understood the culture and the behavior of the illegal Haitian migrants that were coming over. And 2 years ago, I made the point. I'm saying, if we have citizens, if we have Venezuelans who came across here legally and went through our immigration process and are now citizens of Trinidad and Tobago, why can't we advance the possibility of having some of them join the police service or a special system to be able to assist us? Because just recently, I spoke about when they had this whole thing that is still a part of the front burner that is happening with regard to the utterances of Maduro, the response of our prime minister on Trinidadians assisting or supporting or Colombian paramilitary people coming through Trinidad and ending up in Venezuela and whatever. I'm also saying when we conduct our raids here in Trinidad, not every Spanish-speaking person is a Venezuelan.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to have the intelligence. And the best way to have that intelligence is to be connected with the culture and the recognition and the imagery. And I say imagery based on not only an identity, where they could put up a card base. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the identity that these people carry. They take gangs and affiliation to gangs serious.
Yeah.
They have tattoos and markings and numbers at certain parts of their body that identify them with a certain movement. And they will kill for that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, and that's how serious they are. And therefore, our law enforcement has to get in tune to that, where we should have Spanish as
mandatory. Because what them gang members and them criminals and things know Spanish, you know. We see them like me with all them Spanish games and them fellas learning Spanish, you know.
And therefore, if the criminals know the Spanish and talking to the Spanish and affiliating with the illegal migrants, why law enforcement, even through a covert process or part of the counter, not making Spanish speaking mandatory in all of our recruit training in the Defense Force?
That's right.
Because the Coast Guard have to go out there and they're stopping vessels.
Mm.
You understand? They can't be arresting people and then looking for an interpreter. Yes, we know a man said, well, we have Google Trans. I was talking to somebody, but do you have the technology? No, a man could pull out his device. Yes, then maximize the devices to support the investigations and the intelligence gathering. But we have to know who these people are. And the best way to know who these people are is looking at systems that are acquainted with it.
Yeah.
We could be very homophobic, you know, and push back. We don't want no part of the Venezuelans. We don't want no part of Latam. Don't even bring them near the police service. But you have to understand, Trinidad and Tobago, at the speed we are running at, it's going to be a different country in 20 years' time. You know, the face of the Trinidadian will look different, you know.
Well, you give it a lot, 20.
But numerically, you know.
You give it 20 years, that's a long time. Another thing with drug blocks. We have situations where drug blocks are right around the corner, across the road from police stations. How is that possible?
Well, that is something that has plagued me for years. You bring intelligence sometimes. You provide all of the necessary information gathering support that could direct an operations. And because these drug blocks have remained rooted in the soil of the community, information reaches them first before law enforcement could reach the drug block or strike a raid. And that sometimes that leak comes from right within the police station or right from police officers. That's a real thing that we have to deal with. I don't think that should have been allowed to know that we can have a drug block 2 houses away, 100 meters away, or everybody knows. You know something that in my years in national security and law enforcement as a researcher and as an academic, something that I still can't digest, that is the term known to the police. When you hear that, you're like, then why haven't we been able to do something about it? I've been corrected many times in conversations and debates that, well, Mr. Hira, an investigation has to take place. We have to build on the intelligence. We have to build on the evidence. We have to be able to ensure that we have everything to go forward.
What intelligence when it's going? We have seen it right across the road from the police station. What intelligence?
You understand? You understand what I'm saying? And that term known to the police, have you ever heard about an arrest or heard from even if a news bulletin or newscast is being read in here, a name, they give an AK and then he was known to the police.
Yeah, known to the police, yeah.
Known to the police, and then what have we done about it?
Wow. I mean, it's scary. All right, folks, we take some calls, man. 6-2. I don't know how much time, Mr. Yiravud, if you have about 5-10 minutes again. 6-2.
I have 5 or 10 minutes. Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
I have 5 or 10 minutes.
All right, 625-2257, 627-3223. We open up the lines for you, the people, to ask your questions to Mr. Hira. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, dear.
Yes, sir.
There's some lot of bipartisanship with the DPS on the foreign nationals who are speaking different languages. And a good instance would have been last week where you would have seen a bus in Tunapuna, a human trafficking ring would have been bust. So there would have been some level of cooperation. What I would have hoped for is that I thought there was a recruitment process. They should incorporate persons who are speaking bilingual. In terms of some of the criteria, you could put a policy say that we are looking for persons who are also speaking Spanish. And that will help because you are recruiting new members in the TTPS. And in terms of saying 20 years by Mr. Hira there, in terms of the difference of collaboration between persons from elsewhere in perpetrating serious crime, you can augment the system by doing that. So hopefully the government will put a policy in place to direct the TTPS in terms of persons looking at persons as bilingual, assisting them. So you're speaking Spanish and English or different languages. Getting that out of the way, these are one. Number two, Mr. Hira, as far as I'm aware, in terms of agency houses, isn't 10% of those supposed to go to the armed services in terms of when you are building agency houses, where that is concerned? Thirdly, in terms of covert operation in this country, we see covert operations where in specific locations in Valley and in Freeport elsewhere, you have large cache of guns being seized, but there's no individual being arrested. Is that incompetence as part of these covert operations? And lastly, before I go,
and come now, how much questions you go ask from now? Three for the most now. Please, call me back. Yeah, 1, 2, 3. That's it there. All right. Remember the questions, Mr. Hira?
Yeah, well, I remember him speaking. He's actually endorsing. He concurs with the fact of looking at having foreign nationals. Sometimes some of these things is not really much for much information out in the public domain. It could be something that could be in a back channel conversation where it's an initiative that they're looking at. And the 20 years that I gave was not 20 years to initiate that. It was that if we don't do anything now, the face of the Trinidadian is going to look different in 20 years because we are continuously daily being outnumbered by foreign migrants. And that's what I said, you know. And thirdly, with regard to covert policing, I'm really not in a position, and as a professional, I prefer not to venture there to say whether the covert policing failed if we only seized the weapons and you didn't arrest anybody. That should really be something that should be answered by, you know, those, what I'll call the actors, the state agents who are involved specific to those type of investigation. But it's not really the failure as such. I think more importantly is the, you know, more attention needs to be paid when we are conducting these sort of information, gathering the intelligence to drive operations. It's not just about getting the product. It's about getting who's behind that. And transnational organized crime has got no way to be able to insulate that. They have no problem in giving up product and safeguarding and insulating the perpetrators and those involved.
Yeah, let's get another question there. Keep it short. Yeah. Hello.
Mr. Hira, in 1997, a drug dealer by the name of Ramdani escaped. There was a commission of inquiry. And we started here, police bringing weed for man and sell, police doing this, police doing that. Mr. Manning went to Mr. Pandey and he said, the police are doing all they are doing because we as legislators not doing what we're supposed to do. And up to today, we remain in the same place. The police tended a whole 10% of everybody who murdered for a year. That is a failed organization. It has to be fixed. So with all that you spoke about what the police could do and what they cannot do, you can bring equipment from NASA if you want. Until we change the construct and management of the police service to ensure that we have pristine officers, officers of integrity, and persons who know what they're doing and been doing the job what they are paid for, we are not going to get anywhere. We need to reform the police service by using the legislators to do that. I'll listen to your comments.
Yeah. You hear the emotions of the caller, you hear the passion base, and he is probably reflecting a concern and a viewpoint of a large percentage of society that a major change and a shift needs to be done. I mean, I must say, I've been exposed and heard and seen, certain initiatives being rolled out presently by the TTPS, and you know, I give them that space so as to try to get things done. But that reform is holistic. He's quite correct. It just doesn't start with ideas and initiatives or plans that fit in or pillars in a strategic plan. It has to be an overall fix because we can find ourselves going around in circles. And sometimes that fix may mean that you may have to run it at a smaller group of people in order to achieve a bigger task until you can rebuild the thing. So it's a reconstruct, I think, is the word that is necessary here. How they approach that, that would involve a series of deep thinking and deep diving. But it's the existence of a reality. And yes, we must not also blame the entire police service based on the ills of a number of them, because there are some very hardworking, dedicated men and women who want to see the thing change, who are committed to law enforcement, to the police service, and they are carrying the stain of some of their fellow officers who are willing to continue along the lines of criminality and rogue behavior. So that is one of the first things, identifying these rogue officers and being able to treat with it and to send a strong message.
All right, two more questions. Let's go. Hello, good afternoon. Hello?
Base, good afternoon to you, and good afternoon, Mr. Hero. No, I have been hearing the mantra of your last statement about the rogue officers and so on. And Eric is correct. The question of, you know, reorganizing the police through statute. And not only that, Base spoke about when he goes to New York, he sees police officers. And those police officers, Base, you see in the city, they are from the mayoral district. Here we call it regional corporation. And if we restructure in, you must include regional police, even if you want to use it in a sunset period, 2-3 years, to recruit people. Don't use the normal rudimentary police service. And you use those people at that level, strictly at the regional police level. And then you know what? What equivalent to what you call state police, the regular police on there that you could manage properly through proper legislation to get deliverables and consequence when they don't act. They would deal with the corruptive element. So legislation, and not only that, the question of making laws, I noticed we have recommendation, Mr. Hero, about Sandy Gong legislation. That's fine. But you know what? Parallel to that should be dealing with those people at the top, we call the big fish and all kind of thing, that start with our taxes and all this other thing. Until we do all these things, then it would redound to a better management of the police service and security service. And then our people will fall in line. But for the time being, Mr. Hero, for the years I'm hearing you, we still remain the same place, sir. But I listen to you. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you. I respect your views, and it's quite true. You're on the button, as a matter of fact, and I agree with you, to be quite truthful. I think what you have said is impactful. Yes, it will take some time, but you know, sometimes what he's saying, what I was alluding to earlier on to MBA, sometimes you have the national thing in place, but maybe something else needs to come up on the side that can take charge and run with it as well. You still have the localized effect, but from the regional perspective, I remember at one time, and I'll say it publicly here, advancing an idea in an initiative supported by how it can be installed in Trinidad and Tobago for us to consider probably the introduction of the NBI, the National Bureau of Investigation, patterning and modeling behind the foreign platform as for training, as for support, as for resources, and then have the local TTPS look at certain types of crime, but the NBI, the National Bureau of Investigation, to look at transnational organized crime, corruption, to deal with white collar issues, and to have that jurisdiction in all countries across the region that can lead probably even to a Caribbean Bureau of Investigations. But these are the kind of ideas and the talk we need to start, because some people look at these and say, well, that can't work, Mr. Hero, and ready to shut that down based on the first mention. But hey, what if we put it on the table, man, and we start to break the thing down and see how it could actually be applied? Because as it is now, it is all part of the reconstruct and the reintroduction of dealing with crime and national security at a big level. Every time or every day that passes that we fail to, the problem and the challenge is going to get greater.
Yeah, man, Mr. Hero. Once again, final question for myself. Cyber crime. I mean, we have a cyber unit. I really don't know, but a lot of crimes could be solved, again, on the social media, on the internet. Where is the... Is our cyber crime unit functioning in terms of it? Because I have a personal thing where there's this gentleman that has been taunting myself and a bunch of other people in entertainment for years, taking people's profiles. You know, he's doing certain things, sexual things with people, calling them up, and some of them think it's me because he's posing as me. You know, son, and this has been doing on since 2016. I went and signed affidavit, thinking, can I go to cyber crime unit? They said, I reach a point where I really fed up. Right? Is all cybercrime unit functioning? I mean, it seems like nothing is being done.
Yeah, cybersecurity needs. We need to understand the severity of cybersecurity, and we're just talking about you as a citizen, and you are probably expressing the what a number of other people are also being faced. And I don't know if we are being as what I'll call as invasive, or we are pushing as hard as we should be pushing along the lines of cybersecurity, along the lines of investigations, actually bringing people before the courts and setting examples, because cyberbullying is the next one. That's probably our next interview by itself. But the whole aspect of cyber and the cyberspace need, there was attempts at one time to be policing cyberspace. And I'm not too sure where that plan went without speaking in any detail, because that in itself is a sensitive issue, and not everything you can talk in open public. But we need to understand how serious this is, because you're just talking about identity theft and some of the ills that are being conducted in cyberspace and using profiles and that type of stuff. What about utilizing cyberspace to move money illegally and to rob you based on demanding money by menace and sending threats and pictures and all of that kind of things? And then on top of all of that, in the corporate sense, in the banking sector, who are getting hit every day and probably not making it public because they have to continue to sell confidence. So my take in saying all of that is cybersecurity needs to be given a greater attention by our decision makers. And I'm seeing Ministry of AI and all of that. I'm hoping that cybersecurity is given the priority as a major part of addressing crime reduction at a level where corruption and white collar crime, and especially the threats against citizens being used as a platform before, where we had people lurking in your neighborhood and watching over your wall and hiding in corners, they are in your cyberspace and they are lurking and monitoring and conducting surveillance on your behavior and just waiting on opportunities or portals based again on your behavior and in your devices to be able to commit crime. So to answer the question, having said all of that, long story short, a lot more needs to be done, prioritized when it comes to cybersecurity, cyber policing, and being able to secure charges and action against people and bring them before the court of law.
Yeah, man. Mr. Hira, well, it's been a pleasure. I mean, I'm just giving you the last word. Do you really ever think we could get a hold, even a little bite out of this crime plague in Trinidad and Tobago at the rate we're going?
That question really challenges me. If I speak from the emotions and how I see, sometimes I could get worried and want to say no. But as an optimist, as a researcher, as someone who's looking at what is happening, I think we can. But it's going to take some political will. It's going to take some tolerance by us as the citizens. And we're going to have to start doing some new things. And we can't go back there with the same old. There's a saying, torchlight and barrier can't reduce crime. That was, at one time, that could have done it. It didn't go on in the next direction, right? So I think, yes, there is some hope. There's hope for Trinidad and Tobago. We all have our parts to play in this, and we are urging our decision makers, our ministers of government, to not see crime as a homeland security. Minister Roger Alexander, a defense, a minister, Sturge, responsibility. We have to see it holistically. It's a whole of government approach. And as we get the opportunity now to strategize as a new government coming into power, every single ministry that has been installed by the Honorable Prime Minister and her cabinet must be factoring a clause into the ministerial strategy on how can we contribute to the reduction of crime, be it energy, be it housing, be it utilities, be it sport, you name it, whatever, health, you name it, whatever is your ministry, ministers, we're talking to you this evening, whatever is your ministry, factor a clause in your strategy, how can our ministry contribute to the reduction of crime so as to support what is coming out of Homeland Security and the Ministry of Defense. Mr. Bass, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
An honor, Trinidad and Tobago, the viewers and the listeners. Look forward to speaking to you again at another time.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. Very much. Pleasure taking his time out. A man that I think should really be more up there when it comes to crime decision making in Trinidad and Tobago, right? Dr. Gavin Hira, right? Regional security expert and former head of the National Operations Center. You're listening, of course, to Freedom 106.5. We shall return.